Hello, listeners, and welcome to our very first Patreon special, available for each and every one of you.
Hurrah!
Hurrah indeed.
Yeah, as we mentioned before, we had a target when we would hit 25 Patreon subscribers. We pledged that we would release an extra monthly episode for everybody. Everyone who donates on Patreon gets super secret extra content themselves, but this is paid for by those beneficent folk, so you have them to thank for a little bit more Westwood Forward.
Yeah, what we thought would be best to do is we've picked now, got 109 worst things in the world, and sometimes we've done episodes and thought, there's probably more to talk about there and more interesting stories and avenues to go down. So these episodes are going to be shorter than the main ones, but we're going to drill down into the topic that we chose as the worst thing.
It's a very appropriate metaphor you've just used.
Yes, that is entirely deliberate. I'm quite good at this sometimes.
Oh, really? Because sometimes it seems like you're just talking out your arse.
I'm also quite good at that.
Yeah.
Well, since Brian mentioned it, we'll get to it. So our very first episode, we won't always do it sequentially, but we will this time. We talked to the brilliant Professor Sophie Scott about the world's worst psychological treatment. We picked for that psychosurgery, or as you guys will probably know it better, essentially lobotomies, lobotomizing. So I've looked into a bit more into that and into trepanning.
Ah, fun. Do you want to give people a short précis of what both those are?
Trepanning is a practice that goes back several thousand years and is essentially the boring of a small hole into the skull in order to let the bad spirits out.
Yeah.
And it's a... yeah.
Relieve pressure on the brain. There's too many bad spirits in there. Decanting them.
Now, what have we got over there? We've got red wine decanter, white wine decanter, and that's just some evil demons over there.
They're definitely a late night, like end of the night shot.
Yes, just sort of dilute with a little bit of tonic water and a slice of lime. And it's one of those weird things that you, when I first learned about trepanning, I think I learned about it as a thing that Inuit people did. And learning about it, I was like, oh, those crazy Inuits, they've got nothing else to do up in the Arctic apart from boring holes in each other's heads. They've bored holes in the ice to find seals to club, and now they want to get a bit of the prefrontal cortex and club that to death.
Are you suggesting that the Inuit thought there were seal demons inside the heads of each other?
Yeah, I definitely
am. That's definitely what you're suggesting.
And they would get a hammer that they had shaped like a polar bear, and they would play a game of whack-a-mole with the seal demons coming out of people's skulls.
While they listened to Kiss from a Rose.
Yeah. Which is an ancient Inuit song that whispered on the wind.
This is definitely verging on the xenophobic.
It's
xenophobic adjacent.
Yeah.
Annexed, even.
Luckily, some of my best friends are seals. But thing is, when I read about it, that felt like a very particular sort of cultural practice. Yeah. So it's quite amazing to discover that it actually happens, as far as we know, in an awful lot of the world. It happens definitely in Mesoamerica. So Incas did it. I think Native Americans in North America did it. Certainly happens in a lot of the Northern European and Scandinavian
Because
tribes.
They found lots of bodies with like very neat holes in their skulls, haven't they? Yeah.
Yes. So, you know, clearly not battle wounds. The first or the oldest trepan skull was found in Ukraine, and it's about 10,000 years old.
All right. Wow. That's pretty effective then, if they're still alive 10,000
years. Yeah. I'm fairly certain some have been found out in the Far East. What I don't know, and it'd be fascinating to know, is if any have been found in Australia, because of course all of the Aboriginal people of Australia were cut off from the rest of the world, so it'd be interesting to know if it was a syncretic practice.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's pretty widespread, even if it isn't. That's amazing.
Yeah, it really is. So it's just, it's a thing humans do.
Can you imagine the adverts for it back in the day? None of our patients have ever complained.
Because they're all dead. Yeah. What do you talk about? There were, when you get
no.
to...
There were adverts.
Not for kind of lobotomizing.
Okay, fine.
In Inuit times, for trepanning, but for lobotomies, yeah, there were.
Yeah.
Lobotomy is slightly different thing.
Come on, the obvious thing is you need a lobotomy like a hole in the head. You're welcome, 1930s American marketing agency.
Well, surely the whole point with marketing is you've got to sort of make it not just about the individual, but the family. So, Labotta me, Labotta you, Labotta everybody.
Please send in your own ideas. catchy lobotomy jingles to us.
Catchy lobotomy jingles.
You know, even out of body experience, you suddenly realise that you're a 33-year-old man and you're saying the word catchy lobotomy jingles.
Yeah, I mean, mate, if you're having an out of body experience, the last thing you need is trepanning. If anything, you need a cork stuck in all of your head orifices.
Keep it all back in.
I'll talk about lobotomies in a minute, because they're a slightly different beast. But trepanning, the word comes from the Greek word tryphon, which literally means to bore a hole. Mm-hmm. And it is different to lobotomy, because lobotomy, very briefly, is removing a certain part of the brain to deal with mental illness.
Often schizophrenia, wasn't it? The big one they were aiming for.
Yeah, and I'll deal with that in a minute. I just want to talk a little bit more about trepanning, because it sort of had a rebirth in the 20th century. There was a Dutch librarian called Bart Hughes, who in the 1960s advocated trepanning as a practice. And his claim was that trepanning increased the brain blood volume and thereby enhanced your cerebral metabolism. Essentially, for listeners, Barry is making... No, that's clearly a bullshit face.
No, sir, I'm just making sure. I'm making a sidebar in my head to question you at some point about why a Dutch librarian was giving us surgery tips. So I nearly missed his profession in the midst of that sentence.
Yeah. Now
first, and he was Dutch.
Yeah. Firstly, friend of the show, Jim Campbell, has an idea that you put the word Dutch before anything and it sounds ruder.
Yes.
Yeah, it was like, what did you do last night? Oh, well, me and Barry, we met a Dutch librarian. Yeah. Did you really? Brilliantly, the idea...
Where did he advocate this? In the library. Because like, getting people to shush after a trepan.
Well, yeah, very true. Well, no, it was basically if you brought your books back more than 2 weeks late, just trepan a hole in your head.
So they'd a really big stamp.
Yeah.
Like the one in Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade.
Bartholomew Hughes, he had this idea that the brain could act in the way that certain trees do, where if it was exposed to more oxygen, it would increase the size of the capillaries in the brain.
Okay.
And it increased the function of it.
Well, now, I suppose that seems to make sense.
He was inspired by going to a party, and at that party, someone was smoking weed and taking LSD.
Right.
And to try and improve the effectiveness of that, they stood on their head to get more blood to the brain.
I see.
So,
But that doesn't require... It doesn't require all of that rigmarole. You just go, oh, people pass out when they're starved of oxygen, so presumably more oxygen is good.
Yeah.
So he went to a different party and someone was doing that, the American dream thing that you do when you're teenagers, where you cut off the blood supply.
Yeah, definitely that. He also contended that children have a higher state of consciousness than adults. Because, you know, and in a way, I mean, I was watching my son this morning just playing with, we've got a multicoloured pelican toy with a little green fish that goes in his mouth. And he was just staring at it like, wow. It's a fish. I'm getting the fishiness of it and the blueness of it, and it's so blue and it's so a fish. And it reminded me of a bit in Aldous Huxley's The Doors of Perception, where he takes mescaline for the first time, and he says, just staring at fruit, and he's just taking in the appleness of an apple and how apply it is. It's like the apple that Adam must have seen on the first day of creation. It's like, wow, just you need to take some vitamin C on this. But it is.
Is there vitamin C in apples? It'll be an orange.
That would be an orange.
What is in apples? Why is it so good for us?
Vitamin A.
What is behind Big Apple?
Yeah. Steve Jobs.
And the mayor of New York.
Yes. But I can understand that notion that children have a higher state of consciousness. Yeah. And then obviously children, when they're younger, they have more bones in their skull because the skull hasn't fully fused, and you've got the hole in the skull, and I've forgotten the name of it.
Yeah, another thing.
Oh, my wife uses the word all the time.
The porthole.
Not a
port. Stargate.
Blowhole.
Yeah, the blowhole.
Like
exactly.
Tiny dolphin child.
Yeah. The underpass.
The
Keir and all our doctor friends is listening to this going,
it's, I want to say,
you morons.
The skull dimple.
I mean,
yeah, basically, my wife.
We're the skull dimples. Yes. Nice middle class couple from Barnstable.
My wife basically uses the term all the time as I have to go, don't stick your finger in your son's skull dimple.
That's
Mrs. Robinson. It's that old Noel Coward song.
The encephaloceal is what it's called. No, that's a birth defect, it
that's
says.
That's a birth defect. No,
it doesn't close that way.
It's not the philtrum, it's the.
Newborn skull. Fontanelles.
Fontanelle, that's it.
There we go, fontanelles.
Yeah, it sounds.
That sounds much fancier than skull.
Yeah, fontanelle seems like an exotic French mushroom.
Yeah, a nice feathery hat.
Yeah, well, maybe that's what you wear to hide it.
To hide your fontanelles.
But anyway, that the idea was that he believed that was behind children have a higher state of consciousness. So if you want to have a higher state of consciousness, artificially create a fontanelle in your head.
Oh, right, because they have, like, skylights, basically.
Yeah, so, sorry, doctors.
Cranial skylights.
Definitely a great glam rock band.
Convertible skulls.
Yeah.
Babies are the coolest things ever because they just have the hood down from birth.
Just flying along the motorway of life.
Driving along my automobile. My baby beside me, what the hell?
Yeah. Brilliantly, because this came up in the 60s, there is...
We're still on him. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. Apparently, this guy hung out with John Lennon a bit, and John Lennon tried to convince Paul and Linda McCartney to get trepanned. Now, I don't know whether that was because he thought they should all do it together or because he was in a really bad mood with Paul.
Yeah.
And he was just like, oh, do you want to stick a hole in your head, Paul?
Then they'll all be Lennon. Not McCartney.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there a song called Hole? There's a Hole.
Fixing a Hole.
That's the aftermath.
Might be. Well, Fixing a Hole is meant to be about heroin addiction.
Oh, right, okay.
Because you know, getting your fix. I mean, Paul probably tried heroin at some time, but it was Lennon who was the heroin addict.
You can rub it straight on your brain if you have a fontanelle.
Oh my god, well, famously, Jimi Hendrix used to take a razor blade and stick little holes in his forehead, then get his bandana, dip it in liquid LSD, and then put it on his head so the LSD would go straight into his bloodstream.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Wow. There was me thinking Jimi Hendrix was a clean living guy.
I'm afraid not. He was, I mean, other than that, vegan milkshakes all day long. But he thought that he was actually taking it from a plastic cow's udder because tripping his tits off. And also don't tell someone on acid that they are tripping their tits off because they will then sort of like try and get loads of cling film around their body.
Keep them, yeah, intact.
So that's what I found out about with trepanning.
Hmm.
And this guy obviously discredited. doesn't even need saying.
He brought shame upon the Dutch librarians. Yeah. We cast you out.
But
hand back in your card. And your ink pad.
Yeah, when the Dutch librarians, they don't have ink pads, they just have waffles that are impregnated with ink. Now, lobotomies are considerably more sinister.
Mm.
Because, strangely, people who were trepanned, it would seem archaeologists have looked at and gone, most of them are all right.
Yes.
Yeah, well, there's a guy... Oh,
how could they tell? They were dead.
No, because they were able to tell that they did not die of that by using carbon dating business.
And a mix of carbon dating and magic.
Yeah. There's just one last little thing. There's a chap, an American chap called Peter Halvorsen, who in his early 20s read about the work of Hughes.
We're back to him.
Huh?
To the Dutch guy.
The Dutch guy,
Hughes,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and 4 years later, he self-trepanned using a foot-operated electric drill.
That's like a one-man band of surgery happening. Like,
yeah.
Working the foot, he's holding it to his head, he's got to keep that in one place.
Yep.
He's holding himself down. The other arm.
Yeah, he's also saying to himself, I've got a lovely bedside manner.
Talking himself through it, yeah. Passing himself scalpels.
Yeah.
That's mad.
He described that afterwards it gave himself energy, focus and drive, and also that he maintained a happy, upbeat, youthful state. In 2001, he pled guilty to practicing medicine without a license after drilling holes in the skull of Heather Perry of Gloucester in England and got a 3-year suspended sentence.
Wow. Heather.
He turned up on Howard Stern's show, famous sort of American shock jock. Bearing in mind who Howard Stern is and what he is like, he described this guy as insane and that the trepanation was a cry for help. Halvorsen responded by saying, "It was actually a lot of fun, Howard."
It landed me in jail after I did it on that lady from England. It's been great. Yeah. I've been living my best self.
If Howard Stern is saying that you're a Fruit Loop, then clearly you are. But I should also briefly talk about lobotomy, which is it's much more creepy. It's one of those things. The first guy who suggested doing it was a Swiss chap called Gottlieb Burkhardt, who in the late 1880s contended that if you removed part of the frontal lobe of the brain, it would help people deal with dementia, mania, which I guess at the time was one of the words for schizophrenia, and paranoid psychosis. He operated on 6 patients under his care, having had very little previous experience of surgery, going from...
I've carved a goose at Christmas. I could probably cut these people's brains open.
Yeah, correct.
My best Swiss accent.
That was vaguely Swiss.
General Central European.
Your Swiss accent was as good as his ability at psychosurgery.
Thank you.
He operated...
I'm doffing my fontanelle to you now.
Barry, your brain is all exposed, put it away. He operated on 2 women and 4 men aged between 26 and 51, and...
This woman's out of date.
Yeah.
Get me a younger model.
One patient died 5 days after the operation after experiencing convulsions. Another one improved, but later committed suicide.
Oh, man.
2 showed no change, and 2 became, in inverted commas, quieter. But he was the sort of the he was the Elvis Presley to the Buddy Holly of Antonio Egasmones, who was an Argentinian chap who in the 20s and 30s
was he Argentinian or Portuguese?
I've got it. Sorry, he was Portuguese but practicing in Argentina.
Ah.
And he sort of did the trepanning approach where he drilled holes in the front of the skull and inserted a metal implement with a wire attached to it to demolish segments of tissue. And then after that, he poured small bits of absolute alcohol into the brain.
As in absolute vodka? Pass me the alcohol pops.
Yeah, yeah. Clearly he was doing it wrong. He needed to use Stolich and I and a bit of Grey Goose.
Yeah.
to destroy the tissue there. And he was awarded the Nobel Prize for Medicine in 1949.
That's mad.
But the guy who was really the Beatles of lobotomy was a chap called Walter Freeman.
Just before he moved past Egasmones, you know, he was shot by an unhappy patient in 1939, 10 years before he won the prize.
Brilliant. Sorry, shot but not killed.
No, he spent the rest of his life in a wheelchair, I think. Or he needed a wheelchair to get around, certainly.
That's really not helping the creepy scientist vibe.
No, I wish someone had suggested, you know what you need for that that gunshot wound? A lobotomy.
Yeah.
Yeah, there has been a sort of a bit of a movement to try and sort of rescind his Nobel Prize in recent years.
Correctly. So, I mean, I know that throughout history, medics have done all sorts of weird and wacky stuff because they thought that it helped. It's scary how recent lobotomization was and how mainstream and orthodox it was considered.
The Kennedys had their daughter. Are you going to chat about her?
Briefly, yeah, I am. I'm going to chat about the guy who did it, first of all.
Yeah,
Walter Freeman. Is the man. He was not able to perform lobotomies because he suffered too much from gout. So he basically was a backseat driver in lobotomies to this chap.
So like a Jose Mourinho figure, not really a background in football, but suddenly at the forefront of its thinking.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, he simplified the procedure by basically going in via the eye socket and using like a mini ice pick sort of device.
Wow.
And
he's really going in the front door there.
Yeah. And so 2 months after performing their first surgery, Freeman and Watts had already worked on 20 different cases. And by 1942, so 6 years after their first operation, they'd performed over 200 lobotomies. And they published their results. See what you think of these for results. 63% of patients had improved. 20, but
yeah, but I mean, immediately you go, well, what's your conditions for improvement? Because a lot of this was for like people who had violent tempers with schizophrenia or various personality disorders. So just saying someone is calmer isn't like a base. That's an improvement on one metric.
Yeah. Hey, 24% were unchanged.
Great. But apart from the missing bit of their brain.
Yeah, and 14% were worse after surgery. That's not
a great hit rate.
You know, one in eight chance of being a bit ruined. They were depressingly, this operation was used disproportionately on women.
Yeah.
I mean, getting awfully close to, hysterical woman, stick an ice pick in her eye socket.
Yeah.
It was used as a cure, in enormous inverted commas, for homosexuality.
Yeah.
And then the most depressing one I found was a chap called, well, I say a chap, a 12-year-old boy called Howard Dully, who suffered from a reluctance to go to bed on time and daydreaming, and so was lobotomised for being a 12-year-old boy.
Oh, man. The most famous amnesic, a man called Henry Mollison, basically. I don't know if it was a full lobotomy, but certainly someone stuck something into his brain and wiggled it around a bit. And scraped some bits out of it, because he was suffering, I think, from epilepsy. And ruined his memory completely. And he spent the rest of his life, he only died about maybe a decade or so ago. And he was very sort of quite calm and peaceful, but just basically had no memory of anything beyond the last minute or two forever.
Oh, God.
So he was studied by people all over the world, and I think he was known as sort of HM, as this famous study case that people would go and study, and eventually his name was released after he died. But a lot of the sort of study of the brain that's been done these days, was a lot of the studies they did on amnesics was this one guy, Henry Mollison. I think they have sliced his brain into really thin strips to try and examine it and see sort of what bits had been destroyed by the surgery.
Ooh, what did they find?
I don't know, but you can view the slides online, I believe, if you're into looking at brain that is sliced as thin as Parma ham.
Parma brain.
Parma violence.
What, is that like a cocktail where you've got a thin slice of brain on the side of the glass?
Yeah.
So he described the...
Which guy's this? Sorry.
This is Walter Freeman still. So Walter Freeman described what he had created as surgically induced childhood. And in an unpublished memoir, he described how the personality of patients was changed in some way in the hope of rendering them more amenable to the social pressures under which they existed. Mm. He described one woman who he lobotomised as smiling, lazy, a satisfactory patient with the personality of an oyster. And he suggested that once people had been lobotomised, you could deal with them using a system of rewards, such as ice cream, and punishment, such as smacks.
Oh, man.
I mean, I'm always fascinated by how recently, how close we are to the barbarism of the past.
Yeah.
But when with medicine, this is a guy operating after we discovered penicillin, after we were using x-rays, when I'd like to think that medicine was much more sensible and scientific in the true sense of the word. But he's
so very telling that the goal is to make people simple and uncomplicated. And easily subdued.
It's clearly a vile misunderstanding of mental illness.
Yeah.
And obviously, mental illness, particularly the sort of things that they were dealing with, it is terrifying. There's no two ways about it. I would like to think I have a fairly tolerant view of it, but I find schizophrenia scarier than a broken leg. But I don't think that you should just whap the brain out and hope that they'll sit there drooling for the next 70 years. Happily, at the other side of this, like, obviously, as you noted, by the 60s and 70s, countries all over the world were saying, this is not a cool way to act.
Yeah.
This is not an appropriate treatment. It does not work. My final little coda on this bit of lobotomy is that this practice was outlawed in Japan and Germany in the 60s. It was outlawed near universally in the 70s. It did continue in France in some places until the 80s. But bearing in mind that the heyday for this with Walter Freeman in America was the 40s and 50s, where they carried out over 40,000 lobotomies in the 40s and 50s.
Oh, man.
But the Soviet Union outlawed it in the year 1950.
Well,
Now, bear in mind...
Those guys need another look.
Yeah. All the medical misdeeds that the Soviet Union did, for a variety of practices, they took one look at lobotomy and went, nah, not for us, comrades, thanks very much.
Do you think the Gulag owners just went, you know what, that this way of subduing is going to put us out of business? Yeah. And just petition Stalin.
Yeah. They took one look at that and go, oh, Stalin's going to be too tempted by this.
Yeah.
So one last little thing that I want to talk about to attempt to leave this podcast on a slightly more positive, uplifting and heroic failure note.
Yeah.
I went down a rabbit hole. I had a little look at Phineas Gage, who I think if you're on this podcast might be someone you've heard of and know the story of. Phineas Gage is the American railroad worker who there was an explosion and
a rod
went like sort of under his jaw, out of his head, and he survived, but it utterly changed his personality.
Yeah.
I would suggest that wasn't because of a brain injury. I would suggest because if you had a railway sleeper through your head, it might make you a bit testy afterwards.
Yeah.
But his stuff
could never get comfortable on the pillow.
But he basically self-trepanned via an explosion.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to talk about him. He's been covered a lot on shows like QI, and I imagine no such thing as a fish. But a guy who I discovered by going down his that rabbit hole is a chap called Anatoly Petrovich Bogusky, who was a Russian scientist born in 1942, who in 1978 was struck in the head with a beam from a particle accelerator.
Ooh.
He was working at the Institute for High Energy Physics in Rotovino, and this is wonderful. I mean, it's not wonderful, it's horrible, but it's a great image. He was checking a malfunctioning piece of equipment when the safety mechanisms failed, and whilst leaning over the equipment, he was struck in the head by a proton beam. It's straight out of Benny Hill being in Superman.
Yes.
Reportedly, he saw a flash brighter than a thousand suns, in his own words, but he didn't feel any pain. However, after a few days, the left half of his face swelled up beyond recognition. The skin started to peel.
Two-Face.
Yeah. Revealing that the path that the proton beam had burned through parts of his face, his bone, and his brain tissue. It was believed that he had received far in excess the fatal dose of radiation, and people took him to a clinic expecting that he was going to die of radiation poisoning.
Uh-huh.
However, he survived.
Oh, this is a superhero origin story.
He completed his PhD. There was virtually no damage to his intellectual capacity, but he was greatly fatigued and suffered a little bit of tinnitus.
Wow.
He was able to function very well, apart from the fact that he had occasional seizures. And he is still alive to this day.
Wow.
He was...
fighting crime.
Yeah. No, he's definitely kept in an underwater prison by Vladimir Putin. Because Putin knows that if Russian Two-Face gets out...
He's the first one to go down, isn't he?
Yeah. So I love the fact that this guy tried to do like a space trepanning, sci-fi trepanning by mistake. And he somehow survived.
Bringing it into the future.
Yeah, so, well done to him.
Yeah.
So that is that brings us to the end of our first ever Patreon exclusive extra for you, all of our listeners. Let us know what you thought of it. Drop us a wee line on @WorstFoot on Twitter, me on @BenVanderveld, him on @BazMcStay, or email us on WorstFootForwardPodcast@gmail.com. And if you're a long-term listener of the show, then give us a drop us a line and let us know what winners you would like us to do our exclusives on in the future. We're going to do one of these a month where me and Barry take it in terms to have a little look at some of our favourite winners from the past. So do let us know about that.
We don't intend to necessarily go from start chronologically through. Also, you know, how about some suggestions of what we call these extra ones? Because we just keep calling sort of Patreon extra episodes. Maybe in like Worst Foot Forward, the third foot. or Worst Foot Forward, two steps back. or something like that.
Yeah, those are both great. Just basically vote on those two.
you're very welcome, thank you.
And we may as well chuck it in there. If you enjoy the show and you want to help us out, please do support us on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/worstfootforward. forward. You can donate as little as $2 a month, all the way up to a frankly preposterous $50 a month. At the moment, that is helping us pop to a studio and record there and pay for us popping stuff online on our website. But our next big thing that we want to be able to do is turn all of our research into a book. That's going to take time and is going to require all sorts of things for self-publishing.
Yeah.
So if you would like us to be able to do that so you can have an ideal Christmas present to give to your loved ones, then please donate to us and help us on our merry way. Anyway, I'm off to get a Black & Decker drill.
Nice.
And help relieve the evil spirits from Barry Skull.
Please give me a minute. I've got to return this copy of Great Expectations to the library in Amsterdam.
Okay, fair enough. Until next time, bye-bye.